get. I'll join the club. Mine's so old it's turned to dust. That seemed to be enough to break the ice. Dotty held out her hand to me and I shook it, noticing how cold hers was despite the heat. We walked into her small, neat kitchen and took a seat at the mahogany table lined with crystals. It's lovely to finally put a face to a name. Grace has been talking about you non-stop since you met. What was it? A few months ago now? Grace's cheeks stained pink. 6 months, 3 days, I said. God, that was awkward. Why did I know that?
6 months already? Dotty gushed. Oh, in my day, that meant you were halfway up the aisle. Of course, back then, we women weren't even allowed bank accounts. If you wanted to move out of your parents' house, you had to get married. Otherwise, you were stuck in with your siblings.
You know, I shared a bed with my late sister Mabel until I was 19.
19?
Grace looked at me, and I wondered if she'd brought many dates here before, because she had an almost apologetic tinge to her expression, as if she thought I might find this off-putting. It couldn't be further from the truth. There was something so warm about meeting other people's families. Being on the wards, I loved to spot the matching inflections in voices, passed through generations, the mannerisms unknowingly mirrored. It got me wondering if there were any unconscious traits I'd picked up from my own parents. I cursed the thought. Dotty moved around the kitchen making tea, pausing to rub the centre of her chest, but she looked happy enough. A nervous habit? I wondered.
I invited your mother to join us, Dotty said.
Grace visibly tensed.
Let me guess, working? Important deadline?
Dotty shook her head.
Villa, south of France.
Oh, our invites must have been lost in the post, Grace replied. Did you tell her about my restaurant plans?
I did. Yeah, she's very pleased for you.
Even I could tell Dotty was lying. But Grace smiled, a childlike innocence at the promised stamp of approval. Dotty quickly changed the subject.
What about your parents, Henry? Has Grace met them yet?
No. They are both... I cleared my throat. Grace looped her fingers in mine, seeing my hesitation as discomfort.
They died, Dotty, Grace said.
I felt like the worst person on the planet. My clean slate was contaminated with dirty lies.
Oh, how terrible. Has it been long?
I closed my eyes. Shit. I wish I hadn't told that lie on our first date. And even more so, I wished I could remember the specifics. And the date your parents died was the sort of detail you didn't get wrong, if it were, you know, true. A while ago, I settled on. I looked at Grace. She didn't seem confused.
Oh, so they probably already passed over to the other side, Dotty said with mild disappointment. You know, there's a window of time when spirits stay on this astral plane. It's quite miraculous, really. And you can communicate.
Dotty, Grace warned.
I know, I know.
Dotty held up her hands.
Not everyone believes in that stuff. Yeah, I'll give it a rest.
It's fine, I said. If believing in a ghostly afterlife was Grace's family's biggest embarrassment, she was doing well. If only I could say the same about the dark secrets of the Dunn family, which revolved around a very different type of spirit. We spent a while talking about Grace's restaurant. In the months since we'd viewed it, things had snowballed. She now held the lease, had contractors fitting a new kitchen as we spoke. The lucky one was in gold cursive above the door, with a little blue tacked note underneath saying, "Opening soon." Dottie was excited, saying she'd be first in line for dinner, that she'd be calling up all her friends, harassing them until they made reservations. Except, it seemed, for a woman named Althea, who she'd been friends with for 20 years, but it turned out she'd fallen out with recently. She'd taken her pictures down from the walls, deleted her phone number. I listened as the two of them talked in depth about how Althea had met a man at a book club and was already considering moving in with him. In her late 70s. Replace those ages with 17 and it might have made sense. Grace was insisting Dottie try to embrace the new boyfriend, and Dottie was crying as she said she couldn't. I excused myself for the bathroom, returning to find them in a much brighter state. Grace's phone rang. It was the bank. "I need to get this," she said, apologising. She looked at her grandmother. "Can I trust you not to give him a hard time while I'm gone?" Dottie laughed. "What do you take me for?" Grace stepped into the garden. "Go easy on him, Dottie." "I'm not about to grill him," Dottie said, but she was lying. As soon as the door clicked shut, she turned to me, eyes piercing. "There's two things I need to know. Do you love her?" I didn't have to think about it. "More than I've ever loved anyone." She nodded once with approval. "You should tell her that every day. I love my Grace, but she's as secure as a paper chain. She needs some gentle reminding. It's why I was happy to become a guarantor for her business loan. To prove to her that someone believes in her. That she can do this."
"Wait, you co-signed her restaurant loan," I said.
"Grace didn't tell you?"
"She must have. I hadn't slept much the night before. I couldn't be sure I wasn't misremembering. She told me it was mostly savings, said something about a business grant."
"Grace doesn't have any savings," Dottie said, quickly adding when she spotted my dismay. "I'm sure she only wanted you to think she was capable. Grace has never believed in herself, that she's good enough, smart enough. It was my daughter's fault, of course. My Ruth excelled at everything, never struggled, whether it was at school or in business. She took on the world and won, and she taught Grace she had to do the same. And life doesn't work like that. Not everyone wants to be at the top of the mountain. Some of us are happy, enjoying the comfort of base camp. But if Grace wants this restaurant for her, not to impress her mother, or me, or you, then the least I could do was help her get it."
My emotions jumped from two extremes. Unwavering gratitude that Grace had someone in her life who loved her enough to support her, unequivocally, no questions asked. And the risk that if this went wrong, Dottie might lose her home. Jesus, that was my biggest fear. I had a feeling I was going to regret what I said next.
"You said there were two things you needed to know?"
She nodded. "How do you feel about small, dark places?"
"Not a huge fan."
"I sense some skepticism. Let's find out for sure, shall we?"
2 minutes later, and the top half of my body was in Dottie's very hot and pitch black attic. She stood in the hallway below me, directing me as if in some kind of reality show challenge.
"It's next to the gnome with the red hat," she called.
"They all have red hats."
It's got a beard."
"Again,"
I said, looking around.
"Beards everywhere."
It wasn't my place to ask why one person needed 15 garden gnomes in their attic, and so I didn't. I kept reaching around the space, searching for a wooden box Dottie thought was up here. Eventually, I found it.
"Oh, there it is,"
She arched to reach my outstretched hand before bursting into a cough. Chesty. Not the first time she'd done that today. It was all adding up to a number I didn't like. "How long have you had that cough?" I asked. Her guilty gaze found the floor. "And the chest pain." Her pursed lips told me the answer was a while. "Shit." "And the cold hands?"
"Cold hands mean warm heart. That's what I was always told."
"Cold hands means lots of things," I said. "It could be nothing, but it also could be something. And I can tell from the look in your eyes that you've been worrying about this for some time. It's best to get it checked by your GP." Dottie glanced at the box, the weight of this conversation wrapped around her shoulders. I spoke gently. "Studies have shown that with dramatic lifestyle changes..."
"What type of lifestyle changes?"
she asked. "Exercise, low salt, low fat, no alcohol. These things have all been shown to give a marked improvement in heart health." She finally looked up at me.
"Even broken ones?"
Grace was back in the house. "What's broken?" she asked, before spotting me hanging out of a hole in the ceiling. "What on earth is going on?"
"I'm vertically challenged," Dottie cried in defence.
"I really don't mind," I said. And I didn't. I would get my hands dirty for Grace, for anyone important to her. Grace looked aghast when she saw what her grandmother was holding.
"No, not the Ouija board again," she said. "Last time you messed around with this, you ended up sleeping on my sofa for a week. There's a reason we put it out of reach, remember?"
"I can handle it," Dottie replied. "I know what I'm doing."
Her eyes pleaded with mine. She didn't want me to mention her health concerns nor her broken heart. "Was everything okay?" I changed the subject. "With the bank?"
"What? Oh, yeah,"
Grace squirmed. "They wanted to double check some things with my savings." While her mouth stretched into a smile, her eyes darted nervously to Dottie. "Three people, three lies, and three things we'd all come to regret."
Chapter 16. Grace. Now. The Happy Tofu lives up to its name, that's for sure. I walk out of the little restaurant with a smile on my face, having done the cook of my life. Thanks to all my prep work, I knew the menu well. I was acquainted with the techniques. The owner, a short, bald man called Dominic, said I was a natural talent, that he loved my authentic passion for meat-free dining and was sure I'd fit right in with the team. The role won't propel my career into the stratosphere like I thought I wanted first time around, but I feel good about this. Really good. I'm still in Winchester City Centre when Dominic's number flashes on my screen. A call this fast can only be good news. "Dom, hi," I say. "So great to hear from you so soon." But it's not. Not at all. Because between the 30 minutes since I left the interview and now, Dominic, as he explains in the nicest way possible, has spoken to Jean-Paris, who, shockingly, didn't fill him with confidence. "I'm sorry, Grace," he says. "I think you're a great chef, but I can't take a risk right now. I've got my life savings riding on this. I can't explain how important that makes things." He doesn't need to explain, because I already know exactly what that's like. How your workforce's livelihood depends on the number at the bottom of a spreadsheet. How this industry is so cold and tough. You're forced to find ways to control the uncontrollable. Which means not hiring the girl whose only reference falsely claims she almost killed someone with a shellfish allergy. I wipe a tear from my cheek and thank him for his time. "If anything comes up in the future..." The line goes dead. With nowhere to be, I walk the high street for a little while, past the old stone city walls steeped in a regal history far greater than the one I keep fretting over. I take a seat on some steps opposite a boutique bookshop, catching myself in the reflection of the windows. I see myself so differently to how I did back then. Before, I saw imperfections. A girl with menstrual acne, tired eyes, boobs a bit too small, knees too knobbly. A failure in her parents' eyes, reckless in others, especially her own. There was no end to the list of flaws I could find. Now, I see a strong, healthy young woman with time on her side. She's been through so much, with so much to come, and she's not given up. She's still going, still pushing. I know how good I am, how good I will be. I just need a chance. The idea doesn't come to me fully formed. It's barely an idea at all. More an inclination. A hunch. An image of me putting myself out there. Making my own luck. Forging my own path ahead. For me. For the girl in the reflection who wants to feel hope, but has nothing to be hopeful for. I head straight to the outdoor market. I buy more food than I would in a monthly shop. Everything fresh. Ruby red ripe tomatoes, earthy potatoes, silky golden olive oil, leafy herbs, grainy spices. It costs me a fortune, and my shoulders feel like they're about to pop out of their sockets as I walk the rest of the way home. A woman on a mission. Dislocated shoulders aren't going to stop me. But Henry, sitting at my dining table, is. He looks up from one of my cookbooks when he sees me. "Hey, Sasha let me in before she left," he says. "I hope that's okay." I'm so flustered I can barely shut the front door. "You're here to..." I wonder, glancing at the open page before him. It's a picture of one of cookery's television legends, sensually massaging oil into a slab of beef. "Perv over Gordon Ramsay?" Henry laughs, closing the book. I got bored waiting. I look over my shoulder. "For... you?" he says. "We made plans to look at houses this afternoon." "Yes," I say. It had felt like a good idea at the time, but one look at his lips again and I was questioning my sanity. Henry had texted me late one night asking if I was up. Our text conversations were endless, morning to night, only interrupted by work and the group hangs that had become weekly events. "Friends," I kept telling myself. "We're friends." But every time I saw his name on my screen, my heart would skip a beat, and I knew time was running out, that I couldn't string this out forever, that I needed to make a decision about us, one way or the other, before someone got the one thing I was desperate to avoid, hurt. Henry had sent a web link to a property he'd viewed earlier that day and asked me for my honest opinion. I clicked it, seeing what looked like an ordinary two-bedroom home until I got to the picture where an entire bedroom was covered in fake fur. Walls, floors, ceilings, lampshades. "If those walls could talk," I replied. "They would scream for help," he wrote. "I got hives just looking at it." "So when do you move in?" I joked. "At this rate, I might have to," he replied. "House hunting does not suit the nocturnal. Everything half decent is selling so fast. By the time I wake from nights or get home from shifts, I've missed out." An image of Henry missing out on his dream home filled my mind. I pulled my sheets up to my neck, wishing the comfort of my bedding would seep into my bones and wash away all traces of guilt. The painful, luminous kind, from another lifetime, but still here. Still like a hardened lump in my sternum. "Why don't I help?" I'd replied, before I could talk myself out of it. "I could speak to estate agents while you sleep. Set up viewings." I watched the typing bubbles come and go three times before two words appeared. "You sure?" There was no logical reason why I shouldn't be sure. I was unemployed, with plenty of time on my hands. This was a kind and decent thing to do. The opportunity to course correct a mistake that hadn't happened yet was just an added bonus. "Of course I'm sure," I typed back. And from that, the plan had formed. He'd come to my mind and talk budgets, preferences, locations, and I'd be his house hunting assistant. "I'm so sorry, I had totally forgotten," I say, Well, I hadn't forgotten. But this morning was my interview and I got sidetracked with... Wait, you never said that. He springs to his feet. How did it go? I didn't get the job, so not great. But it doesn't matter, I say with a huge smile. Henry looks at me like I've lost the plot. Because I have a plan. Henry takes in the bags I've plonked on the dining table. One falls over, and out roll 10 onions. You're testing the limits of human consumption? Jean-Paris' references are ruining my career, so I'm taking things into my own hands. I'm going to bake a pie laced with laxatives and send it to him, I say, deadly serious. Henry bursts into laughter, and when it subsides, I finally admit that if I want to stay in this industry, I'm going to need to try something new. It's only an idea at this stage, I say, but I feel good about it. Confident. Very secretive. Do you need me to leave? You're not going anywhere until we found you a house, I say. He watches me as I grab a bag and open the fridge. I feel his smile from across the room. Yes, chef. We spend the next hour sitting at my dining table, huddled around Henry's laptop. He tells me his budget, how much deposit he has, how much he set aside for fees and potential renovations. It feels so intimately personal, him handing over information like he trusts me, like I'm part of it. I promise myself I'm not going to mess this up. But he's right. The property market is bleak. Everything that looks remotely livable has the words "sold subject to contract" marked next to it. Undeterred, I scroll through the list of sold properties, trying to get a feel for his tastes, as if I don't already know. There's no window in the bathroom, he says, of a sleek modern flat that was within his price range. Okay, something like this one? I turn the screen to show him a little townhouse, not dissimilar to the one he lives in now. Too orange. Have you ever heard of paint? It's quite revolutionary. He sighs. I'm just picky. I know what I want, and I'll know when I see it. I turn the screen back to face me. I know exactly what he's looking for too, even if he doesn't. The house he found before. A cozy little semi-detached place on the outskirts of Winchester. The house he fell in love with, that then fell out of his reach. It was being sold by an old gentleman who'd done all he could to keep it neat and tidy, but it needed complete renovation. The living room had yellow floral wallpaper and a garish red carpet. The bathroom suite was a hideous shade of avocado green. I don't remember much else, besides the rosebush in the garden, and the fact that Henry looked so overjoyed when he stepped inside. I genuinely thought he might burst into tears. This is it, he'd said. This is my home. It was going to be his project, a place he could carve up and rebuild from scratch. That house should always be his house, in any timeline. And I'm going to make damn sure that he gets it. With new property alerts set on my phone and a detailed list of housing deal breakers, there's nothing more to do but wait. Henry thanks me again and stands, packing away his laptop. I don't wait for him to leave before I get to work. I make a clean space on the kitchen side. I preheat the oven. I half expect him to excuse himself, but he doesn't. He watches with amusement in his eyes as I fashion a makeshift phone stand out of hardback cookbooks. My phone topples once, twice, the third time, he steps forward. He'll be here all night at this rate. Henry takes the phone from me. Tell me where you want me. The thought strikes right through my center, all over me. I don't know. I take a steady breath. I'm kind of experimenting. Could you hold it for now, please? He does, patiently waiting for me to arrange my ingredients, set out my utensils. I tick off every step of the cook in my mind. I decide to start with something simple that an audience could easily replicate. Stuffed aubergines with a gooey tomato and cheese filling. Henry takes the lead with filming, as if he knows exactly what I'm trying to create. As I'm dicing a white onion, he angles the camera up to my face. I cover my cheek with my palm. Only my hands, I say. You don't want to be in it? Henry lowers the phone. I don't understand. My hands can be in it, and I'll do some voiceovers. Maybe a shot of me taking a bite at the end. But it's all about the food. Right, he says, still not following. And that will help your career how? I try to think of an easy way to explain it to him. In 5 years, this type of content will be all over the internet. But for now, it's all still long-winded blogs about the history of recipes. I want to get ahead of the curve. I've never been one for social media. It's always so self-congratulatory. Definitely not the place for a perpetual screw-up like me. But now I'm seeing it as a chance to put my cooking out there for a hungry audience, sidestepping the industry politics, the egos, the business games, and getting back to what's important, the food. Have you ever had food envy? I ask him. When you're in a restaurant and the person opposite you gets handed the most incredible, mouth-watering meal, and you look at your plate and go, huh, it doesn't look half as delicious. That's what we want to emulate. Showing them step by step how simple and easy it is, so that by the end, they're desperate to cook it themselves. And we'll only do that if we get really up close and personal with the food. Make it the true star. Panning the camera along the vegetables, showing all the curves, seductively scraping the knife along the crispy edges, cheese oozing, oils dripping, sauces squirting. Henry swallows hard. I might have overdone it on the sexy adjectives. So, food porn? Exactly, I say. He laughs as if I'm joking. I want people to watch these videos and wish they could put their hand through the screen and grab the food and shove it in their face. I want to make vegetables sexy and fun. Oh, Grace. Henry's laugh is deep and low as he steps away, turning his full attention back to the camera. I'm starting to think you can make anything sexy. My whole body zings at his words. Skin hot, mouth dry. It's a good job he's not looking at me, because the combination of Henry's compliments and those eyes could unravel me in a microsecond. I hide my flustering with a rush of chopping and scooping and slathering. Henry is a total pro. He hovers over the food, directing me as if he's filming a blockbuster. A little to the left. Hold it right there. Go deeper with your hands. It's usually me being the bossy one in the kitchen. I like the way he takes control. Calmly. Always saying please and yes and reassuring me I'm perfect. My mind hovers over the abyss of sexy thoughts. How I could close my eyes and imagine him saying those exact words, but doing something very different, but equally delicious. When the oven timer beeps, I grab a flimsy bumblebee print tea towel and fold it. Okay, so this is the opening shot we need, I say. The one to get everyone salivating. The hook. Zoom in on the bubbly cheese. Get the steam, please. Got it. He leans over, handing me an ugly brown oven glove. Use this, though. I push it aside. It'll ruin the aesthetic. You know what really ruins the aesthetic? He replies. Second-degree burns. I've done this 100 times before, I insist. But never with Henry watching. He lifts the camera at the same time I pull the dish from the oven, leaning it towards him. My fingers ache with the heat that's seeping through the fabric, but all I think about is Marco Pierre White's famous saying, fingers are made for burning, until a familiar singe hits my skin. I dart my hand away, dropping the dish on the counter so hard a dollop of molten tomato sauce spills out. I suck the skin of my thumb, and Henry presses his lips together. I can see him physically fighting the urge to say, "Told you so." He puts the phone down to assess my hand. It's not serious. I moved away quickly enough, and it's already stopped hurting. But he brings the pad of my thumb to his face anyway. An excuse to touch me? I've hypothesized 100 flimsier reasons to feel his skin on me. With one hand on my elbow, the other cradling my palm, he nods once, satisfied I'm not in mortal danger. Time passes between us. 5 minutes. 5 years. It's all the same to me. We're still holding hands. The roaring heat from the open oven door fills the space between us. Not a patch on the energy that's burning through our eyes. Are you ever going to trust me? Henry says quietly. It's a dagger to the heart. He has no idea how important that question is, but he knows its effect, because he sees it transform me. The dish, he clarifies. He switches the oven off. It was bound to happen. I'm still hurting. I don't know why I say it. I'm clearly not talking about my hand. But I do. And it fills the room. An explanation for why I won't act on this tension. Why days and weeks pass us by. But I still won't step out of my own way. Be with him. And run off into the happy ever after everyone else can see but me. I know, he replies, as if he understands what I'm talking about. You love Jason and he betrayed you. I get it. Right, I say. I had almost forgotten that man ever existed. I could never forget Henry. I could have woken up here 25 again, after being minutes away from 90, with all those years past, and still feel this way for him. This need. It takes a long time to get over something like that. Months, years, if ever, he says, before falling quiet. I'm watching the pulse point in his neck, the way his Adam's apple bobs with every nervous swallow. I'm realizing, I say. Henry's gaze drops to my mouth, his expression darker, determined. I arch upwards. The gravitational pull of this man should be studied by scientists. I hold my breath. Henry, I loved you. The words fight each other in my chest, threatening to come spilling out. A new first. I could tell him everything. I could watch his face rise and fall when I confirm that together we are better than anything he's ever experienced, and that apart we're two broken halves of the same heart. Henry's eyes snap to mine, as if he can hear the words from inside me. I stay silent, because how can I ever trust him, knowing what he did, what he may still do? He parts his lips, a deep breath as though he's about to say something important. Whatever it is disappears quickly. You need more time. I can give you that. I promised, he says. He steps behind the safety of the phone camera. The moment is gone. We'll need to get this shot before it cools. I'm on a night shift again and... He checks his watch. Less than 2 hours. So we'll need more cooking and less burning, please, chef. Henry follows this with a playful wink, dissolving the pressure, before fixing his eyes on the screen, his hands pressing buttons on the phone like a bored teenager. I take a moment to compose myself, to let my pulse return to a natural rhythm. Then I pull on the ugly glove and tilt the dish towards the camera, cramming my feelings back inside me, reminding myself of the only thing I can be sure of, that loving him is like loving the sunset. Unparalleled beauty, replaced with nothing but darkness.
Chapter 17, Henry, 5 years earlier. On a rainy night at the end of August, Grace and I exchanged house keys. It wasn't planned. We had not long got back to hers after viewing a ground floor masonette in Twyford, which was described as a perfect starter property, but failed to mention the wheelie bin-sized hole in the middle of the living room floor, home to 13, yes, I counted, dead rats. Never again would I believe the words, has potential. Here, I said, showing my phone screen to Grace. They covered it with a rug and the pictures. I knew I wasn't going crazy. I felt her laugh against my naked skin. We were cuddled under blankets, the laptop screen at the end of her bed playing some show neither of us was paying much attention to. Criminally offensive, she said. The shag rug or the positioning? Both. And the word shag, for that matter. That place reeked of death. I bet the listing was an elaborate plan to trap more bodies under the floorboards. I arched my neck to look at her. Did the police know they have one of their best detectives right here? Grace laughed and I couldn't hide my pride. Making her laugh made me feel like I could walk on water. How many houses have I seen now? 20? 30? Feels like 100, Grace replied.
The one with the deadly wasp nest in the attic. The one with rotten window frames. The one that stank of cabbage. They sound like rejected episodes of Friends. The sound of her laugh was drowned out by the lashing rain on the bedroom window. Lucky 101, I said. Why don't you... She stopped herself. Why don't I what? She closed her eyes, turning away. No, it's silly. I was speaking before I thought. I watched her closely. Her cheeks were flushed, too long-lasting to be from our earlier exertions. You can tell me, I said. You can tell me anything. She released a sweet little groan, hiding herself under her elbow. I grabbed her by the waist, gentle tickles on her bare skin, coaxing the words right out from inside her. Why don't you move in with me? She yelped. I stopped immediately. The look on her face was something I'll remember forever. Big, hopeful eyes, bottom lip clamped between her teeth. Did she really say that? Move in here, I repeated. She nodded slowly, with fear. My heart was pounding. I never knew a simple sentence could have such a visceral effect on me. Sasha is getting a place with Roman. You are here most of the time anyway. It feels like... She took a sharp breath. It feels... right. Oh, Grace. I ran my hand over her cheek, pulling her close for a kiss. You have no idea how badly I want to say yes. She sat up, the bedding bunched into her lap. But you're not going to. I put my hand on the exposed skin of her back. It's my biggest dream to own my own home. I've saved for so long. I'm so close to getting it. I just need the right place. I understand that, she said. But in the future? Absolutely, I said. We will live together and have sex in every single room of the house. Even the shed? Especially the shed, I replied. As she threw her head back, laughing, I kissed her throat, pulling her body close. I should have left it at that. I'd already justified it. I didn't need another excuse. But in the spirit of saying what was on our minds, it came flying out. Besides, I can't leave Ali high and dry. Ali. I felt her name ring around the room. Grace tensed, lips pursed. You don't want to live with me because of Ali? Oh, shit, that sounded horrendous. Her voice was flat and expressionless, but I knew exactly what she'd taken from it. Ali is more important than me. That's not at all what I was trying to say. I mean that Ali hasn't sorted her long-term living arrangements yet, and if we did this, I'd be moving in here as soon as the sun rose. But it wouldn't be fair not to give her a decent heads up. Grace was silent for a beat. Is she moving in with you in your new... No, absolutely not. She nodded. Okay. As much as I loved Grace, I hated these moments between us, where her war wounds would show, and I'd try desperately to heal them, only to split them wide open again. I tucked my arm under the curve of her back and pulled her until we were chest to chest. I smoothed the hair from the side of her face. I could hardly believe she'd asked me to move in with her. And I'd said no. It was a default answer. Owning my own place had been my dream for so long, I was never going to do anything that compromised it. But as I kissed Grace again, a new dream came to me. I began to picture us hand in hand in a department store picking out furniture, getting covered head to toe in ice white paint flecks, thinking how exciting it would be to christen our bedroom, bathroom, even the bloody shed. I smiled, imagining what it would feel like to have someone to come home to, something I had never experienced. Moving into Grace's rental house wasn't going to work, but what if she moved in with me? And I made my dream our dream. My home, our home. I tucked the thought away, giving myself space to think on it, to clear the first hurdle of finding a suitable property before I brought it up. This is perfect, I said, wanting to reassure her. Being with you, here, agreed, she said before kissing me, then pulling away with a mischievous expression. Except, what? You know what would make this even more perfect? Again? I'm going to need a minute and possibly a protein bar. She laughed and rubbed her nose against mine. Red velvet cake. Oh, man, I said, throwing the blankets back. She squealed as the cool air hit her naked skin, tucking herself back under quickly. What are you doing? I'm going to the shop before you turn the oven on. I'm hoping to get some real sleep tonight. I wasn't going to make one, I swear. Such a terrible liar. You thinking cupcakes or like a full-on birthday cake that serves 12? She laughed in disbelief as I pulled on my trousers. It's almost midnight and torrential. Come back to bed. I will, with cake and a plate. I paused. On second thought, anything sweet tastes better eaten straight off you. I winked, rolling on my sock. I can't believe you, Grace said, eyes wide, as though I were committing to ride off into battle for her, not take a quick walk to the corner shop. I leaned forward to kiss her before I left. Wait, she said, pointing to her handbag at the end of the bed. Pass my keys. I handed her the bunch. They were all colour-coded with nail-varnished tips. She pulled a pink one off the chain. This is yours. Pink is my colour. I'm serious. I know we're not moving, you know, but I want you to have it, she said. As simple as that. Completely natural. We locked eyes. I wondered if she was feeling the buzz the way I was. How momentous this was. If you want to, you don't have to take it, she added. I do. There wasn't a single hesitation in my mind. I grabbed my bunch from my back pocket and pulled off the only spare key I had. Something I'd never stopped to question before that moment, having two front door keys on one bunch. But now it felt like this was the reason. This moment, right here. Grace added my key to her bunch. I added hers to mine. Our eyes met again, and I knew it was time. No more second guessing. I love you. Say it. Say it. Say it. Grace? Yeah? I couldn't get the words out. They tasted bitter in my mouth, laced with bad memories and dark consequences. Grace deserved so much more than an overused cliche. She deserved something personal, unique. Something only for her. I kind of like you, I said. Her smile was beaming, and I swear I could have spent the rest of my life looking at only this girl and not missed the damn thing. I kind of like you too, she replied. I walked through that rainstorm with the biggest grin on my face. The excitement of a child to return to Grace's and open her front door with my own key. And years later, after everything, I kept that key on my chain. She probably changed the locks, possibly even moved. But I kept it all the same, tracing my thumb over the pink gloss like a genie's lamp. Like my wish of making it all better had a hope in hell of coming true.
Chapter 18. Grace. Now. It's a 5-hour drive down to Devon, but with the influx of traffic escaping for the long August bank holiday weekend, it's going to take us almost 7 hours to get to Sasha's parents' holiday home in Solcombe. Roman, Marcus, and Ali are in the car behind, and I open the window, closing my eyes as the warm breeze hits my skin. This is the type of mundane thing that I would never have thought twice about before. I'd have probably sat in this car, complained I was hot, opened the window to further complain about the exhaust fumes or how the pollen was making my nose sting. Now I revel in it. I take lung-filling gulps of air. I widen my eyes when the sea comes into view. I smile from ear to ear when the sun peeks through the scattered clouds. It all feels so awe-inspiring. This day, round two, infinite possibilities.
You're like a freaking puppy, Sasha says to me.
I love it. The heat, the sunshine, the fresh air.
It's so amazing when you think about it.
She narrows her eyes, glancing at the thick exhaust pipe of the crawling lorry in front of us and the puffs of jet black smoke that trail from it.
If you say so.
Then she nods her head in the direction of Henry, who's fast asleep in the back seat after coming off a night shift this morning. He barely said a word when we picked him up 3 hours ago. He was that tired.
You two are getting on well?
Hmm, I say, returning my attention to the endless green view from the window. There's a moment of quiet where I think she will drop it. But then it's Sasha, and of course she doesn't.
I think he likes you.
Henry likes everyone.
Likes you, likes you.
What, are we 12? Sasha laughs. She can tell I like him too. She's known me since I was 20, and for all my efforts, I am not subtle. She's been there when Henry has come over to help me film my cooking videos. She's seen us walk out the door on our way to view prospective properties. I know we look like a couple, like the picture-perfect image of a new relationship. But we don't touch. We don't talk about us or how we feel. It's as if there is a black marker pen around certain subjects, and Henry won't bring them up. Not until I do. I catch Henry's reflection in the wing mirror. My stomach flips. Dark hair falling lazily across his forehead. Heavy, sleep-filled eyes. I tell myself I don't know how warm it feels to be curled into the space between his neck and his shoulder. How tight he holds me, even when he's in deep sleep. How are things with you and Roman? I ask, changing the subject to something less emotionally obliterating. Sasha moved out a few weeks earlier, and we cried on the doorstep before she drove away. 6 years living together. The end of an era. This is the first time I've properly seen her since.
Good,
she says, as though she settled on the word but not fully committed.
There is so much exciting stuff happening with my plans for the firm and the interest I'm getting from clients. We're not even engaged yet, but we've spoken about it, and it'll happen soon, but...
But? I squeak. Sasha, that sounds amazing. How the hell is there a but?
But I'm so broody. I don't know why. Is that mad? I'm only 28. There's plenty of time. I'm so busy, but I can't stop thinking about babies. There, look!
She points to the sky.
That cloud looks like a baby, doesn't it?
I'm seeing cherries. I tilt my head to the side. Or possibly testicles. She groans a laugh.
I'm going insane.
You're not. You just have baby fever. I almost tell her it will pass, but then I think of her failed attempts at IVF, of Dr. Gomez, and the 5-figure price tag. I know these things for sure, but I wonder if Sasha somehow knows them in her soul. If her gut is telling her there's a long road ahead. Determination and talent can give her the career of her dreams, but they can't give her a child. I've been trying so hard not to become a lightning rod in everyone's futures, leaving them to find their own way. But for Sasha, I make an exception.
Follow your instincts, I say.
is the exact opposite advice I gave her when she asked me before. Back when I thought of pregnancy as a monthly battle you fought hard not to lose. Before, I told her that she wasn't really ready for a baby. Not before 30, at least. Projecting much. And to put her career first. I was one of many saying it. Her parents, her sisters, Ali. Sasha never told me at the time, but now I know that having a family was the biggest dream in her heart. I've worked so hard to get where I am, she says. Through all the bullshit, the racism, the misogyny. I kept pushing, and now I'm finally in a place where I have everything I wanted. Yet there's something missing. But maybe I'm rushing things. It doesn't need to be now. I see a future version of Sasha, crying on my shoulder, heartbroken from the truth that, for her, the expiry date on her fertility came sooner than she expected. The next few words have never felt more important. I think time is a blessing we always think we have, but never really know for sure. Why don't you see a fertility specialist? See how things are looking? That way you can make an informed decision. You think that's necessary? I nod. I think everyone's fertility is different, and it's better to be certain than to assume. This could give you the insight you need on whether to hold off or start now. But if a family is what you truly want, then don't let anyone else convince you otherwise, I say. That's the beauty of it all. You get to decide what your life looks like. I really thought you were going to say something different. That I should wait until I'm 35. That my career would suffer if I even considered it. Wow. Never again will I question how well Sasha knows me. Well, knew me. Life changes you, I say. I put my career above everything. And look where it got me. Bankrupt, single, and miserable. I realise what I've done when Sasha gives me a bewildered look. Bankrupt? Emotionally, I clarify. Oh God, that's dramatic even for me. Sasha lets out a mini squeal of excitement. Maybe I won't be needing that jumbo box of condoms after all, she laughs. Do you want them? I tut. What am I going to use condoms for? Balloon animals? Sasha looks at Henry on the back seat again, still fast asleep, and wiggles her eyebrows. You know he wants you. I fake a laugh. Never gonna happen. But when I roll my head to the window again, I sneak a glance to the wing mirror, the reflection of Henry, and I swear I see him stir. When we arrive in Solcombe, it's raining. Torrential, can barely see three steps in front of you rain. Beautiful British summertime. The two cars pull up on the driveway, and it's a mad dash to get everything inside. Wet, muddy shoes squeak against the wooden floors. Elbows get whacked against protruding doorknobs. It's a beautiful cottage, with a giant brick fireplace and ornate brass fixtures, but it's so old it feels cramped. As if the ceilings are a few inches lower. The hallway is closing in. Or maybe that's the effect of Henry and me being locked within the same four walls. When we're all inside, our bags in a pile at the bottom of the steep staircase, Sasha explains the logistics. There's a main bedroom to the left of the stairs. That one is mine and Roman's, she says, shaking water from her hands. And then there are two smaller rooms, both with double beds. You can fight it out between you. Henry lifts his hand. Are we forgetting something? My thoughts exactly. Oh, sorry. Sasha taps her forehead. Yeah, we need to do a food run. There's a supermarket on... No, Henry says with a nervous laugh. We're a bed short. Right, Sasha says, and she looks at me as if to say, I tried. Of course, there's a fold-up camper bed in the cupboard under the stairs. It's super comfy, but it will need to go in the living room or dining room, so privacy is a bit of an issue. I'll take it, Henry says. No, I'll take it, I counter. It's fine, he says to me. I know it is, which is why I'll take it. Everyone squeezes their lips together. Glad we got the first awkward moment out of the way early. If there's ever been an excuse to hook up, I think it's this, Marcus says. Roman lifts three bags at once and heads for the stairs. Well, you two can figure that out. We'll, get settled. Above us, wardrobe doors open. Marcus wails with boyish excitement about how big the shower is. After a small deliberation, Henry and I agree that he'll take the camper bed for the first night and I'll take it for the second. Very amicable. I help him drag the bed into the living room, squeezing it between a bookshelf and a warm leather armchair. I grab the spare bedding from upstairs. Henry puts a clean white cover on the duvet while I roll a fitted sheet over the light mattress. It creaks and croaks as I shift my weight on it. I think Sasha was pushing the limits of the words super comfy. Through all this, Henry barely speaks to me, and all I can think is that he overheard me in the car. Never gonna happen. Ugh. I should have said, we're friends, or I like him too much to cross that line. Why'd I have to make it sound like he had two heads and onion breath? You sure about this? I really don't mind sleeping down here, I say. He keeps his attention on unpacking his bag. And for some weird reason, I get the feeling he's more mad at himself than me. Take the bed, Grace. It's the least I can do. After a supply run, we all spend the next few hours drinking and chatting. Sasha's summer playlist echoes in every room of the cottage. It's so laid back I barely notice who made the suggestion. But as soon as the rain clears, replaced by the soft blue hue of the early evening sky, the hot tub cover is off and we take to the garden. Roman fires up the barbecue. Ali plonks an ice bucket on the table, filled with wine and a few soft drinks. I take a seat on a damp sun lounger beside Sasha and Ali. They're talking about Sasha's plans for her law firm launch, client she's already signed, but they stop when I arrive. Before, something like that would have made me feel ostracized, defensive of my friendship with Sasha. But now I feel almost pleased. I'm glad Sasha has other people she can trust, will hold her up in ways I can't. Henry tells me you've started making cookery videos, Ali says. My shoulders tense, lifting to my ears in a shy shrug. The impulse to laugh it off is overwhelming. The more people who know about this, the more people who'll know if it all goes wrong. But I fight it, forcing myself to sit a little taller. It's new and weird. I never thought I'd be that person online. So I constantly think I'm the most embarrassing woman on the planet. But it's going okay. Okay, Henry calls from across the garden. She's only been posting a few months and she's already hit 10,000 followers. I give him a confused look, questioning how he knows that when I only reached the milestone yesterday. I have, I say. I'm officially the vegetable girl. I have a brand deal with a cookware company lined up too. It's not for much, but it's a great start. It was only a matter of time, Henry says, smiling. She's a natural. All credit goes to my expert videographer, I call back, relieved that whatever weirdness was hanging over us earlier seems to have shifted now. Sasha and Ali share a look. I know that look. It's the look of hope and promise. The conversation moves on.